This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This weekly series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, from Washington, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. We're very happy to have on the program again today Representative William Cramer, Republican from Florida. Mr. Cramer, it's a pleasure to have you as our guest again.
Glad to be back with you.
Mr. Cramer, you're a member of the House Judiciary Committee, the committee which has originated this proposal which we've been discussing on a number of our recent programs, the Civil Rights Act. Now, I would like to get your comments both as to the substance of this proposal and as to the manner in which it was handled in the Judiciary Committee. Let's take the last part of the question first. Did you see anything unusual in the procedure by which this civil rights proposal was passed through the Judiciary Committee?
Very much so. I've been a member of that committee for 9 years, and I have yet not experienced the railroading tactics that took place relating to this legislation, nor have I experienced the lack of communication or liaison with members of the committee and those who drafted the final bill, even though I'm a member of the subcommittee that sat on the legislation and listened to all the hearings and was in executive sessions for over 6 months. It's a very unusual proceeding. It was a star chamber proceeding. The drafting of the bill was done clandestinely by one or two members of the subcommittee in conjunction with the Attorney General's office. On a weekend in Washington, the bill was sprung suddenly on Monday. I rushed back from my home, my district, and it was delivered to my house by the Attorney General's chauffeur, one of them, at 10:30 at night, and we were supposed to vote on the bill at 10:30 the next morning. The bill was presented. It was read. A 56-page bill was read and passed in a period of an hour. No discussion was permitted. I wasn't permitted to even intervene with a parliamentary inquiry, let alone a point of order. No amendments were permitted. 1 minute discussion took place by the chairman, 1 minute by the ranking minority member. The vote was then taken, and as I say, I've never experienced such a railroad procedure since I've been a member of the committee. Lawyers usually pride themselves in following proper procedures, but it certainly wasn't done in this instance, and it set a very bad precedent, and particularly when it is a view concerning a bill involving such important matters and such broad general fields, many of which are even conceded to be beyond the general jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee.
The Judiciary Committee has had before it this general subject of civil rights since last February, and your subcommittee has held, as you said, countless hours of hearings.
That's right.
Into the subject. But yet, on the day that the bill was sent to the House, passed by the Judiciary Committee, an entirely different bill was substituted.
Right.
Is this correct?
That's right. A bill which we had not even, had many clauses and phrases and titles in it that we had not even considered in the subcommittee or in the hearings, and have no one's ever explained what some of them mean.
Now, Mr. Cramer, I know that there's been an effort on the part of backers of the civil rights proposal to describe the bill which finally was approved by the Judiciary Committee as a compromise or a so-called moderate piece of legislation. Do you find it so?
Well, I think I can judge it objectively as a member of the subcommittee who sat and heard these matters, that this is the strongest civil rights measure that has ever been considered by the Congress or voted out by the Judiciary Committee, cutting across broad areas of jurisdiction that doesn't even belong to the Judiciary Committee, such as education, FEPC, the question of the educational title that are not within the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee. And it cuts across more rights, not only of individuals, but of the states, than any bill that has ever been considered. And in my opinion, overall analysis would be that it's a stronger bill than that initially proposed by the administration. There's no question about it. And as a matter of fact, in many respects, is stronger than even the strong subcommittee bill, which the Attorney General supposedly stated was too strong medicine for the administration at that time.
Well, now, Mr. Kramer, what are some of the more objectionable features that you encounter in studying this proposal?
Well, let me say first in summarizing that it appears to me that the overall bill creates actually more civil wrongs relating to the majority of the people than it protects in the way of civil rights to the minorities. And after all, the Constitution was intended to protect the rights of all the people. With relation to the bill itself, I can give you some examples. In the Title I relating to voting, there was a big argument with regard to impounding ballots, where a pattern and practice of discrimination has been found in a given area under present law. The Attorney General has power to act. He just hadn't acted as often as he should have if he was carrying out the intent and purpose of the legislation. He's dissatisfied with district judges. He doesn't like southern district judges, so now they have had, they came up with the gimmick of permitting votes to be counted and affect elections, even though a pattern or practice had never been determined. And that was the constitutional basis for getting into court in the first place. So without a constitutional grounds for getting in the first place under the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, they now devised a way of getting into court without that determination. It's all the Attorney General would have to do is say that less than 15% of the people in a given area were not registered who were in the minority, without any proof of any kind other than his statement. Now, obviously, you can't pass that kind of legislation, be it in the name of civil rights or otherwise. So what was done was I was one who insisted, and it was adopted, an amendment that would require impounding of those votings until a final determination of pattern of practice was made. Well, that made the Attorney General very unhappy because he had to still go before the district judges. So they finally came up with the one thing they've been wanting from the very beginning and got it in this so-called compromise. And that was to take all these voting rights cases out of the hands of the district judges, who are familiar with the local problems, and put them in a three-judge court, immediately appealable directly to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, that's what they've been trying to get for years, and it ended up in this so-called compromise. Now, that's an example. I can give you another. Let's take the public accommodation section. Admittedly, they cut down the definition to some extent, but yet they, and under the Interstate Commerce Clause approach, but yet they turned around and threw in the 14th Amendment approach and broadened it to all equal protection of the laws cases. So we were have a broader bill than we had that was a, than what was initially introduced. Now the Supreme Court back in 1875 ruled that the then civil rights statutes on the books were not constitutional because they violated the rights of the individuals to his use of property. And here's what the Supreme Court said at the time. An individual's right to restrict the use of his property, we're now talking about public accommodations, lies beyond the reach of the 14th Amendment. Freedom of the individual to choose his associates or his neighbors, to dispose and use of his property as he sees fit, to be even irrational, arbitrary, and capricious, even unjust in his personal relations, are things entitled to a large measure of protection from government interference. And yet, the anomaly is that you have the Attorney General coming in and saying that they want the Supreme Court on education, desegregation upheld, as the law of the land, supposedly, and yet they want to violate the law of the land as it relates to the 14th Amendment and accommodations by writing the 14th Amendment into the accommodation section. Now they want to have their cake and eat it, too. That's quite obvious.
Now, Mr. Kramer, do you believe that the average American, particularly those living in parts of the nation which have not been plagued by a rash of racial uprisings and demonstrations and lawsuits and so forth in recent years, do you believe that the majority of people in this country really understand what the Civil Rights Bill would do or how they might be affected by it?
Well, I'm a little troubled. I don't, obviously. And I'm a little troubled because I get many letters from throughout the country, from ministers, from other people who say, please vote for the Civil Rights Bill, quote unquote. I've been getting it for the last 8 months. Of course, others say vote against it. But it's obvious they don't know, and how could they know what bill they're talking about? The bill didn't emerge but a few months ago. And I would venture to say that 99 and 9/10% of the people in this country have never read this bill. And I would strongly recommend that if anybody wants to know what's in the bill, they write their congressman and they ask for committee report number 914 and a copy of the bill, H.R. 7152, and sit down and read it and decide for themselves, because I'm thoroughly convinced if they do so, they will not want the federal government injecting itself into their business, into the rights and responsibilities of their states and local communities to the extent that this accomplishes it. Now, there's been a big argument, for instance, about Title III and about the power of the Attorney General to bring lawsuits. Well, they wrote that power into three sections of this bill, and then they turned around, not being satisfied with that, and wrote the right of the Attorney General to intervene in any type case involving equal protection of the laws, broader than the 57 and 60 Acts where it was taken out. And he now has, under this so-called compromise, broader powers than ever before, let alone FEPC, without proper judicial review. Any business with employees of 25 or more are subject to the FEPC provisions, not only on hiring, but on administration after hiring, on treatment for training of the employees, on treatment for promotion of employees. Their records have to be made public and available to the commission, which is outside the Department of Labor, and the commission can then bring a suit, or mandatorily must bring a suit, against the party if they don't follow their orders. And they don't have a right to review or a trial de novo.
Could this affect the seniority rights of labor union
members? No question about it. Labor unions are specifically included in the legislation. And they don't have a right to a trial before a court on the subject matter of did or did I not discriminate. They are subject to the Civil Procedures Act, which is the only remedy made available, which always favors the government agency that makes the decision, because his decision, if it's supported by the evidence, must stand, not a preponderance of the evidence, which is the usual rule of evidence. And therefore, your chance of disclaiming or disproving your own discrimination on a case brought by the Attorney General with your taxpayer money against you as a taxpayer, you still have the weight of evidence against you that the administration and the administrative agency, his decision, unless it's an abuse of discretion, must stand.
Well, in other words, to summarize then, Mr. Kramer, you're of the view that this bill would take away more rights than it would confer.
I think that would be a fair summary of my basic belief on the bill after careful study and consideration, that it perpetrates more wrongs than rights it protects.
Thank you very much for being with us today.
Glad to be with you.
Our guest on today's edition of Citizens Council Forum has been Representative William Kramer, Republican from Florida and a member of the House Judiciary Committee, discussing the Civil Rights Bill. Join us again next week at the same time, and we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew speaking coast to coast, saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, assisted by a grant from the Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, an official agency of the state of Mississippi. Join us next week for another informative discussion, and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedom.